This is VK6ARN. News West is a WA-based club, and we continue to deliver news content to sandgropers and beyond since 1931. Good morning, this is VK6 Amateur Radio News for Sunday, the 18th of January, 2026. I'd like to start the news with a short brief on one of my favourite amateur radio podcasts, which is also feeds my other interest, and that is Linux in the Ham Shack. This podcast has been running since around 2007 and has amassed 604 interesting episodes covering everything from equipment, software, activities, many guest speakers, and a bit of hedonism in the form of whiskey, food, beer reviews, in a very friendly and inclusive atmosphere. I've been a regular listener and occasionally contributor for around 15 years, and I can affirm that much of my interest and knowledge of amateur radio has come directly from this podcast. I have to sadly announce, though, that the primary producer of this podcast, Russ, K5TUX, became silent key this week after a couple of weeks of intensive care with the flu virus. Russ will be sadly missed, and in all likelihood, this will end production of, in my opinion, the best amateur radio podcast currently available. Vale, John Russell Woodman, K5TUX.
Hello, I'm Tony, VK6DQ, from Peel Amateur Radio Group. The countdown to Parkfest 2026 is underway. The largest annual hamfest south of the river will again be held at the Mandurah Bowling Club on the morning of Saturday, February 7th, near the Mandurah Rail Station. Doors open for exhibitors at 8 a.m. If you have not already booked your free tables, do so now, or you may miss out. Doors open for the public at 9 a.m. The entry fee is still only $5 each. Get in early for a bargain, meet up with old friends, barista coffee, hot food. The door prizes and mega raffle draws will be at 12 noon. Cash tickets available at the venue on the day. However, they are available right now via the PARG website. Bring your ham radio and electronics enthusiast friends along for a great day in Mandurah. Put it in your diary now. Saturday, February 7th, Peel Amateur Radio Group's annual PARG Fest and Swap Meet.
Ham College is a Perth-based organisation focused on providing top-quality training to enable students to attain their foundation, standard and advanced licences. We run a foundation course in the first weekends of February, April, June, August, October and December of each year, with the exams being run the weekend after. We also run a standard advanced course on Tuesday nights this year, starting on Tuesday, March the 10th, and finishing in October. While there are quicker ways to get the qualification, we believe our approach provides the best depth of knowledge of any course in the country and providing the most useful start to your amateur career. To book a place on any of our courses, please use the Contact Us page on our website at www.hamcollege.org.au. We are constantly looking for additional instructors to assist in delivering our courses, and in particular, looking for one more instructor to join our standard and advanced course team. This would suit an electronics professional or anyone with a good depth of knowledge of electronics in general. We've had a number of foundation licensed hams also assisting in delivering the foundation course, so please don't let your license level prevent you from assisting. More experienced hams are also sought after for teaching all levels of training. Our training and support crew are well respected and a friendly crew of hams. We learn from each other and our students. We're also keen to add to our training courses to provide training in other aspects of the hobby, but would need additional instructors for this. So if you have a topic you'd like to teach, please contact us via our Contact Us page. And again, to book a place on any of our courses, you can contact us via our Contact Us page at www.hamcollege.org.au. Thank you.
Good morning from the Southern Electronics Group. SEG would like to announce an event planned for March 2026. The SEG Mount Barker car boot sale is planned for Saturday, the 7th of March 2026. The event will be located at Frost Park, the Mount Barker racecourse, which is just off McDonald Avenue in Mount Barker. Doors will open at 11 a.m. and there will be a $5 cover charge for buyers and sellers. Bring on your treasures or come and grab a bargain. For all those southern country folk who miss the Hamfest sales in Perth, here's your opportunity to clear out the shack. We'll provide further updates as we get closer to the event. This is Darren, VK6EK, for the Southern Electronics Group.
The John Moyle Memorial Field Day contest is on in March. March the 21st and 22nd, to be exact. That's 9 weeks away, so this is an early warning, so you can make up your mind about how to enter the contest. Well, what's so special about the John Moyle contest? Its proper name is the John Moyle Memorial Field Day. John Moyle pioneered the use of radio communications in emergency situations in Australia, particularly fighting forest fires. He recognised the benefits of instant communication between units and between units and the control centre. The John Moyle Memorial Field Day doesn't only serve to commemorate the man, but to exercise our skills in portable operation in case of times of emergency. And if that's not enough to convince you to have a go at the John Moyle, how about the attraction of a weekend leave pass along with a weekend portable operation in the great outdoors? The great outdoors is a bit of a rubbery expression. It could be a campsite in the bush where you must take all of your own resources in to a setup in the park over the road from your house. For those unable to operate portable, there is a home category, so nobody needs to miss out. Finally, rule changes introduced this year have introduced multipliers to the scoring system, which forces anyone looking for a good score to collect as many call sign prefixes as possible in every 3-hour block and per band. So to get a competitive score, people will have to work a bit harder to collect the prefixes for every band. This could be a game changer for us here in Western Australia. I'm Bob VK6POP.
WAG news for January 18th, 2026. There is no news. Well, almost. The next meeting of the West Australian Repeater Group is on Monday night, February 2nd, just under a week before Pargfest. And while sure, we're going to Pargfest, we get to turn up to the first Pelican Point Sea Scout Hall, number 12 Australia 2 Drive in Crawley, for the first time this year. Doors open, as always, around 7pm for a 7:30pm start. Tea, coffee and refreshments are available as you have plenty of time both before and after the meeting to chat with your fellow Perth hams. Yes, the next WAG meeting, Monday at the 2nd of February. The next technical and general net is, as always, 10:30am this morning after the callbacks on Perth Repeater VK6 RLM 146.750 or Channel 3 in the old money. Joining us will be all of those on the VK6 All-Star Hubs and or their own hotspots. And as always, if you're listening to this in the evening, well, it's next week. 73s from VK6 RRG. From the 1930s till now, this is News West.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
Hi, I'm Steve, VK6SJ, with another episode of Did You Know? When we talk about long distance contacts, most people automatically think of HF. But here in WA, VHF and UHF can sometimes deliver results that are just as impressive and occasionally quite remarkable. And a lot of that comes down to where we live. WA has a landscape that really favours VHF and UHF propagation. We've got wide open plains, sparse vegetation, low population density, and one of the longest uninterrupted coastlines in the world. Compared to heavily forested or built-up regions, that means fewer obstacles to weaken or scatter signals. Even under normal conditions, signals here often travel further than expected. One of the standout propagation modes in WA is tropospheric ducting, particularly along the coast. Tropospheric ducting occurs when temperature inversions form over the ocean, stable layers of warm and cool air that create an invisible duct, allowing signals to follow the curvature of the earth. Western Australia's coastline is almost purpose-built for this. Many VK6 operators will recognise the signs. You turn the radio on in the evening or early morning, and 2 metres or 70 cm suddenly sounds different. stations appear that simply shouldn't be there under normal line-of-sight conditions, yet they're strong and steady. Paths such as Perth to Geraldton, Perth to Albany, and long distances along the south coast are well known during these events, often achieved with modest power and practical antennas. The south coast of WA has long been regarded as one of the best locations in the country for VHF and UHF work. Cold southern ocean waters, stable high-pressure systems and long uninterrupted sea paths combine to produce exceptional tropospheric conditions. Because of this, amateurs operating from the south coast have been involved in some of the longest documented VHF and UHF contacts made in Australia, particularly during organised operating events. One contest that really highlights this is the Ross Hull contest. The Ross Hull contest encourages VHF and UHF operators to work long distances and make the most of propagation conditions. Over the year, it has provided a perfect opportunity for VK6 operators, especially those on the south coast, to demonstrate just how far signals can travel when conditions are right. South Coast stations have consistently featured in the distance results, logging contacts that stretch many hundreds of kilometres on bands like 2 metres and 70 cms. Some of these contacts were at the time regarded as Australian distance benchmarks, and they stood for years as examples of what could be achieved with good operating skill and a favourable location. One name that often comes up in discussions of long-distance VHF operating in WA is Barry 680i. Barry was well known for his dedication to VHF and UHF and for his careful attention to antennas, operating technique and propagation. His results in events such as the Ross Hull contest helped demonstrate that outstanding distances could be achieved from WA, especially from the south, without resorting to excessive power or exotic equipment. What made these achievements stand out was not just the distances involved, but the consistency. Year after year, stations like Barry VK680i showed that understanding propagation and choosing the right location can make all the difference. It's not just the coastline contributing either. Inland WA also plays a part. Large flat areas allow signals to reach close to their full radio horizon, while elevated sites such as ridges and escarpments give repeaters and portable stations exceptional coverage. This is one reason WA repeater systems can cover such large areas compared to those elsewhere. Then there's sporadic E propagation. Sporadic E occurs when patches of ionisation form in the lower ionosphere, allowing VHF signals to be reflected back to Earth over long distances. It's most common in late spring, summer and again around mid-winter. When sporadic E opens up, 6 metres can suddenly behave like HF, and on rare occasions even 2 metres joins in. VK6 operators have experienced sudden openings into eastern Australia and parts of Southeast Asia, sometimes lasting only minutes, but unforgettable when they happen. WA's climate helps too. Generally dry air, frequent high-pressure systems, and seasonal sea breezes create stable atmospheric conditions that favour enhanced propagation. These are often the very conditions that make long-distance VHF and UHF contacts possible. All of this means VK6 amateurs are operating in a very special environment. WA is one of the best places in the world to explore what VHF and UHF can really do, and the achievements of South Coast operators in events like the Ross Hull contest are proof of that. So the next time you hear a distant station appear on 2 metres or 70 cms, remember, it's not magic, and it's not just luck, and maybe it's not one of the internet versions. It's WA doing what it does best. You've been listening to Steve, VK6SJ via News West, VK6ARN.
Foundations of Amateur Radio. One of the potentially trickier aspects of putting together your shack is connecting the radio to the antenna. On the face of it, the challenge is limited to making sure that you have mating connectors on both ends. But when you actually start implementing this, you'll run into several other considerations. The very first one, as I said, is the connector. Every amateur I've ever spoken to goes through the same process. You pick a connector, typically the one that your radio comes with, then you adapt the connector on your coaxial cable to suit. Then you'll get an SWR meter, a dummy load, some testing gear, a coax switch or two, perhaps another radio or an amplifier. And along the way, you'll discover that you now have a growing collection of connectors to choose from. and that's just the connectors inside the shack. After considering connectors, you'll start to contemplate the coax itself. You'll likely weigh price against signal loss, but there are other aspects to the selection of the right coax for the job. For example, how do you get the coax actually into the shack? One of the main challenges associated with solving that problem is, surprisingly, something that rarely affects our hobby, other than any human factors associated with the phenomenon of weather. Getting coax into a shack generally involves passing through a weatherproof barrier of some sort. In doing so, you're likely to create a place where the weather can make its way into places it's not supposed to. Water can and will travel along your coax. Hopefully on the outside of it, but if you're unlucky, on the inside too, likely destroying it along the way. At first glance, you'll think that water only travels down with gravity, and in an ideal world, you'd be right. But as it happens, water will happily do other things, like get blown by the wind, or condensate in temperature gradients like those found near a hole you just created in your lovely weatherproof barrier. If your shack has existing openings, they're generally the easiest to appropriate. Things like gaps in the eaves, existing vent holes, between roof tiles or sheet iron. Plenty of existing places where you can get from inside to outside a shack. Note that this is also the case if your shack is a trestle table tucked away in an office, like mine. Before I continue, I'm about to raise some potential safety issues, but I'm not an occupational health and safety professional, so do your own due diligence. If you do need to go into your roof space, height aside, consider it a dangerous place. Make sure that there's someone to check on you, and consider alternatives to climbing up there. Wearing a face mask and full body clothing is a very good idea. Often you'll find exposed wires, deteriorating or toxic insulation, and other nasty things. Conductivity of steel roof frames and pipes are also a hazard, so be extremely reluctant to venture there. Avoidance is preferable. Working at heights 101. Don't. That said, there may be no alternative. You can lift corrugated iron sheets by undoing the roofing screws. If you do, make absolutely sure that you don't make a string of water inlet points when you put it all back together. In lifting a sheet, you can access the roof space and run your coax. Sometimes the gap between the corrugation and the rafters is sufficient to push the coax through. But if you live in a hot climate, make sure that it doesn't touch the sheeting, since coax is likely to distort, if not outright melt, if it's in direct contact with the iron sheet while the sun is belting down on it. Consider the temperature rating of your coax. Similarly, terracotta roof tiles tend to have enough space to allow coax to enter the roof space. Be very careful, since they are often fragile and potentially irreplaceable. Look for openings like existing roof fittings, things like chimneys, vent pipes, roof ridges, etc. for simpler points of entry. If you need to make a hole in your roof and seal it, there's special rubber grommets for this purpose. You cut a little opening in the grommet too tight for the coax, then force it through. Seal to the roof with UV-stable silicone and you're good to go. Check them every so many years, they deteriorate. Speaking of silicone, if there's an existing hole that you're using, don't just seal it up. It might be there for a reason. Windows often have vent holes or gaps that will fit some types of coax, and there's inserts you can use to open a sliding window that will accommodate coax, but consider the security of that window before you commit. There's also special flat coax for running through a window frame or under a door, but check before you buy that they're suitable for the job. Ladder line is also an option. It's much thinner, can travel longer distances, but its performance can be affected by corrugated iron and other conductors. Rarely, if ever, does the initial acquisition of coaxial cable involve details like bending radius, the smallest turn you can make with the coax without destroying its characteristics. Since bending causes the insulation, the core and the shield to distort to some degree, and with it affect the RF passing through. Whichever path your coax takes, consider that you can cut it short but not long. If you really must know how long the coax is, use some string to run along the proposed path. But beware, the string has a bending radius that approaches zero. Coax does not. Most coax will specify a bending radius for fixed and repeated bending. The fixed one is for a one-time only bend, and 65 millimeters is typical. Thinner coax tends to have a smaller bending radius, but that might affect the signal loss or the budget, or both, so take that into account. Cutting and joining also introduces points of failure, places of moisture ingress, thick spots that cannot be pulled through existing holes, and plenty of other hidden fun and games. In other words, don't be stingy. Get it right. It might cost a few bob extra, but you'll have a happier time of it. If you need to run your coax inside a wall, the tool you're looking for is called a cavity king, not of the embalming variety, though relevant if you happen to do something foolish, like drill a hole through an existing power wire in your building. So don't start drilling holes where it suits without checking first. If you do, make sure that you drill on an angle facing upwards from the outside and find a place where the coax itself doesn't get wet on the way in. Speaking of holes, terminate the coax after you installed it, not before. You can use electrical tape to attach a rope to pull the coax along its route without damaging the coax. Before you close up the roof and pack everything away, attach the connectors to the coax and properly test it. If it fails your tests, it's easier to run it again with everything in place than it is to start from scratch. Ask me how I know. In my shack, I have a run of RG214 that goes to my VHF-UHF vertical. I also have a run of Quad Shield RG6 that goes to my HF antenna. If you're familiar with coax indicators, you'll know that RG6 is actually 75 ohm, not 50 ohm. Given that it's made from aluminium, not copper, it's also an absolute turd to solder. What it does have going for it is that it's absurdly cheap, since it's used in satellite dish installations across the planet. It also very handily can be terminated with F-type compression connectors, which in the 25 years I've used them, I've yet to see fail. The F-type connector can accommodate a handy B and C adapter, bringing us back into the realm of amateur radio. My coax goes under the corrugated iron of my roof, through the plasterboard of my office wall, hidden away in a cupboard, snakes under the cupboard door along the wall to the termination coax switch that is in turn connected to my radio. More on that another time. The two coax runs are tied together to ensure that they don't coil weirdly, don't pose a trip hazard, and it's connected to various fixed points along its path. None of it is permanent, other than the hole in the plasterboard inside a cupboard behind a faceplate. So after removing the coax, a blanking plate brings everything back to invisible, if that's ever required. What happens outside is a whole different story, and what it attaches to yet another. The point is that from the place of picking the right connector, you likely discover that routing coax is potentially a bigger challenge than you might have considered at first. There are other options. What issues affect the ingress of coax at your shack? I'm Ono, Victor Kilo 6, Foxtrot Lima Alpha Bravo.
Covering Western Australia and beyond, this is News West, brought to you by WA Amateur Radio News, on air, online and on demand. This is VK6 ARN, and I'm Mark, VK4 MHQ.
A word from Wison, WA. Preparations are underway for our first meeting of the year to be held in the beautiful natural surrounds of Kings Park at the Rotunda at the end of Soar Ave on the western fringe of the park. Entry from the lights at Thomas and Soar. We'll be setting up around 10:30 for a barbecue and transmuting into our first Wison WA meeting for the year before running the first VK6 Fox Hunt starting around 3 p.m. So join us for the day in the park on Sunday, February the 8th, the day after Pargfest. 73s from VK6 Whiskey India Echo.
Have you read the January edition of QTC magazine yet? QTC is produced by volunteers for the Radio Amateur Society of Australia. QTC is an electronic magazine, viewable online, or can be downloaded as a PDF. You can get your copy of QTC at vkradioamateurs.org. And yes, you heard correctly, QTC is free and available to everyone. No memberships required. The leading article in QTC is by Paul, VK2, APA, discussing how we should be looking forward and maintaining and growing our vision for amateur radio into the future. The RASA committee will be meeting together in April to consolidate our vision for the future. This will be published in full in a later edition of QTC magazine. Meanwhile, the RASA committee is already discussing directions and strategies. Would you like to have some input into this process? We're considering some sort of survey, however, there's nothing stopping you from sending your thoughts on ensuring the future success of amateur radio to RASA. Our email address is info@vkradioamateurs.org. And the website again is vkradioamateurs.org.
Good morning, I'm Rory, VK6 X-Ray Victor, with this week's helpline, the 18th of January. Hope your January is going well and 2026 is following along behind very nicely, I hope. And today I have the following for you, not much difference from last week. I'm looking for a microphone for Mac, VK6 Mike. He's looking for a DTMF microphone. That's one with buttons on the front that goes beep, beep, beep. And a suit of Yaesu Fox Tango 2200. A Fox Tango 2200 transceiver, e.g. a microphone similar to, if not the same as, a Mike Bravo 27 Bravo Bravo. If you can help Mac, this is the third time lucky. Lucky for some, hopefully for Mac. Please call him or email him on his email address, which is vk6mike@iinet.net.au. vk6mike@iinet.net.au for uniform. And thank you once again, Mac. Anyone would like anything put in the helpline for this year, this month in fact, or even February, please contact me. The address being VK6 X-Ray Victor, X-Band Viracta at bigpond.com. I'll say again, VK6 X-Ray Victor at bigpond.com. And until we meet again next week, hopefully, 73 from Roy, VK6XV.
And that wraps up the news for Sunday, 18th of January, 2026. Thank you to all of the contributors, regular and incidental. Thanks to the production team for keeping the show on the road, and those that every week put this news on the air. Your time and ongoing effort is greatly appreciated. Please stand by now for the callbacks, or if you're listening to this online, visit vk6.net and record your callback through the online form. I'm Darren, VK6EK for Amateur Radio News, VK6ARN, 73.